We're back here on the Game Hour 2. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner all with you. John in Vegas coming back at 5:40 with Vegas prop bets. And no, these are not just your who's going to have the most receiving yards prop bets. No, these are good prop bets at 5:40. 5:25, a little more football talk. If you missed the signing day show from yesterday, is going to be derived from all of that. You can check that out at newsradiokman.com and the on-demand tab, by the way. But coming up here in the opening segment, I know the end of the last hour was fun. We do have to get back into basketball, which is not as fun. But obviously that's topic A today. K-State with a very, very crushing loss last night to TCU at Bramlage Coliseum. 537-1350, 866-776-1350, or the game KMAN to get in contact with us here on the show. We'll start with this because I think it's clear that this game sent the season in a wrong direction. I think it's clear that this game affected the season more than any one game that they've had to this point in the season. Whether it be positively or negatively, based on K-State losing that game against TCU, that sent the season heading in a wrong direction. If you look at what happened in the actual game, the disappointing part, one of the disappointing parts, is that there's a lot of the same symptoms here of a problem that's been showing its head throughout the entire season. Fell behind by 14 in the first half. You know, that's the third straight game that they have fallen behind by at least 14 in the first half, which is crazy. They struggled down the stretch to make plays. Bruce Weber called it playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win. No matter which way you want to slice it, they had three turnovers in overtime and went 2 of 6 from the free throw line. Not being able to close out a game there. And you led by 5 with about 2 minutes left. That's probably the more damning thing, that you didn't close the game out at that point in time. We've seen that happen time and time again this year in a lot of the losses. And even a new thing, and this, I'm not sure that I could sit here and say it hasn't happened at all this year. There's probably been instances, but this was one that was at least somewhat unique to the TCU game last night, and that was, I thought Bruce Weber made a great point to go ahead and mention it in postgame.
He's 6 for 6 at halftime. He only gets one look in the second half, so we didn't do a good enough job getting the ball to him. Maybe they played better post D. I don't know. We'll have to watch.
Now that's in reference to DJ Johnson, who was 6 of 6 in the first half and took one shot the entire rest of the way. All big problems, all a big part of the reason that they lost, and what I would classify as symptoms in this case of what's going on.
Let's go through step by step here, or problem by problem, and look at this more closely. And I'm not saying that I'm going to defend the coaching on absolutely all of this, because that's definitely not the case. But first of all, the slow start. And I'm just asking you a question here. How much of a team not looking ready to play goes on coaching, and how much of it the players need to, you know, strap up and figure out that they actually need to be ready to play and need a win really badly in a game like that?
Okay, well, so the way that you're about to go about this, I was kind of trying to not show you my cards totally, but yes, I'm lumping everything here under. So if you're going to go that route, I'm going to stop and hit pause and say this. All three of those things, not being prepared in the first half, having that be a recurring problem, not being able to make plays down the stretch and close out games, and in particular against teams that you definitely should be beating, and then not being able to adjust and get the ball back inside when you have a guy who's been arguably your best player for a lot of the season who's 6 for 6, I would classify all the coaching umbrella more than anything else. I don't know what you're going to file most of that stuff under other than that. You know, I would think that one common pushback that I would get from that is, okay, well, look, this team, as we were talking about earlier, doesn't have the bodies right now to really withstand some of these guys being banged up, being beat up, or just not totally locked in on a given night, whatever the deal was with Dean last night, you know, whatever the deal is with Barry Brown struggling some. My response to that would be the roster is constructed how it's constructed, and that is another part that falls under the coaching umbrella. I think that's another thing that falls under coaching. You assemble the roster. And yes, there have been some things that have happened, some injuries. There have been defections even this year, Dante Williams leaving. What started this whole thing in motion was defections from a couple of years ago when 6 players left in one offseason. But that all goes back up to the top. You can have some of that, but you have to be able to withstand that. You have to be able to have a roster that's capable of taking some of those blows, because everyone's going through it. Everyone's going through being a little beat up right now. And you could sit here and say it's happened more to K-State than other schools. I mean, I guess we could sit there and really try and parse out all the details, but this was not the year for having that as any kind of valid excuse. I mean, it's a bottom-line business this year, and I just won't buy that anything really falls under much else than just going straight back up to the top.
So, you know, in general, you're saying that the coach has more of his finger on the go button for his players than the players do for themselves.
Okay, you're getting back now to the specific instance of
them
not being prepared to play.
Sure.
Yes, I think it comes back on the coach. Now, is there some blame to be put on the players? Like, sure. I mean, they are the ones that are physically out there. But it's happened three games in a row now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think everybody would tell you that this team is pretty talented and they actually have pretty good players. You'd say Barry Brown's a pretty good player, right? You'd say Wesley Owundu's a pretty good player. I know you like DJ Johnson. I know you think Dean Wade has as high a ceiling as anybody on this team and is a pretty good player. They're putting pretty good players out there. They're not performing. I mean, what are we left with here? I just feel like it's a catch-22. Like, no matter where you go, you're going to be running around in circles, and eventually we're coming back to the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. That's. I mean, again, it's not necessarily a you versus me here. I just am trying to get, you know, more of a sense of where you're coming from on all these things. But I agree with you to a certain extent. I don't think that there is anything black and white with how a team performs over the course of a game. I don't think you can ever say that it's 100% the players or 100% the coaching. There's got it because there's a relationship there. There is a checks and balances process between the players and the coaches, and there is a mutual respect there or a lack thereof, and there can be blame or praise gone around a million different ways. So you move on to the DJ Johnson issue. I would actually defend K-State's coaching a little bit more here because I thought that TCU did a great job defending him in the second half, first of all. But the bigger problem was that when he got in foul trouble, he just didn't play nearly as many minutes. And when the minutes that he was in there, a lot of times he's worried about getting attacked on the defensive end of the floor and potentially fouling out of the game. That could probably contribute to him only getting one shot. But no, you absolutely have to find a way for him to at least get three or four shot attempts in that second half.
And it doesn't mean that the season's over. I mean, I'm sitting here saying I think that coaching, you know, that's where the fingerprints show up all over the team. And right now this team, typically teams are reflection of their head coach. And right now we're seeing some trends here. We're seeing having trouble closing out games. We're seeing not being able to make plays late. We're seeing whether it's the first or second half coming out completely unprepared in one half of basketball and falling behind. I do think that that goes back up to the top. Now, can they turn it around? We've still seen that they have the capability to play with just about anybody in the league when they are functioning at a very high level. So, yes, it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility that they could make the tournament. And this does not turn out to be the beginning of the end, which I think it has somewhat of a feel of in a way. Because, again, this was the first loss that really took you off the path, the perceived path to the NCAA tournament. So it definitely could be. But they're still in Lenardi's tournament somehow today. I mean, they are. It's a weak bubble. You go out and win one of the next three, I do think you're back on track. But then that leads me to a bigger issue. And this is where I'm sure a lot of people would start to disagree with me more. But I think this team still can get to the tournament. They absolutely could. But it feels to me like they're just having to battle and buckle down so hard, and this has become such a grind to get to the tournament, like with this culmination season and this group of players. And this is really a three-year culmination. Maybe if you really want to go just a two-year culmination, but a two-and-a-half to three-year culmination when the program gutted itself and you started it back up and you've been chugging along and trying to get to this point. And I do think they can sneak into the tournament. But if you sneak into the tournament like that, next year there's no DJ Johnson. There's no Wesley Owundu. They've relied so heavily on a group of six here this season. Two of them are going to be gone. And you'll be replacing them with young guys, unproven guys, guys that have been hurt, if it's going to be James Love. I would tell you that I have my doubts that next year's team would be better than this year's team. And then you look back on it and say, well, this was like a two-year build, a two-and-a-half-year build to just getting into the NCAA tournament, and then there's more of a drop-off. Whereas this program 5 years ago was at a point where the baseline was a year like this, getting into the tournament. That was your baseline, and you're building up towards bigger things like a run at an Elite Eight. for instance, the run to the Big 12 title that culminated in 2012-2013. We just got to think about where the program is at and where actually things are really headed. That's what I would try and put in, plant a little seed in your brain.
I definitely agree with a lot of what you just said, and I would phrase it a little differently by making a comparison to something that, believe it or not, Bill Snyder said yesterday. One of his last questions yesterday was about not wanting really talented kids to come to K-State if they didn't feel like this was the place for them. Or in his words, we do not want to have to twist someone's arm to come to K-State. How does this relate to K-State basketball? Well, I would look at it this way. Even if K-State makes the tournament this year as like a 10 seed and they're the last team in or whatever, the process of having to twist K-State's arm, twist this team's arm this much just to get to the tournament probably is not a good indicator that the program is suddenly going to be able to make a Sweet 16 run or an Elite Eight run in the years to come. If you are squeezing everything that you have out of this roster just to make the tournament, that doesn't bode well for your chances of being nationally relevant going forward.
Totally agree. That was exactly what I was trying to say. And I'm sure there would be some that would tell me the growth of the core of Dean Wade, Kamau Stokes, Barry Brown, Xavier Sneed will wind up outweighing the loss of DJ Johnson inside. And Wesley Iwundu to an extent. Now, he was not great last night, but the big loss here is DJ. I mean, that's the one you worry about. I think those guys can offset the loss of Wesley Iwundu. Yep. I don't think they can offset the loss of DJ Johnson. And you put a gun to my head right now, I would tell you, I think there's no way that that team next year would be better, barring, you know, a transfer, someone coming in, all things that could still happen. But I'm telling you, the way I see it right now, with the information that we have in front of us right now, I don't feel great about it. And last night is just the type of loss that sends your thinking in that direction, makes you start looking at those types of things. There was a legitimate hope for me, and I think a lot of people, after they had the 2-0 week beating Oklahoma State and West Virginia, that like, okay, maybe this team is good enough to get into being a 5-6-7 seed instead of being a bubble team that sneaks in. That has definitely seemingly gone out the window, you know, with what this group is right now. We've got John in Vegas at 5:40, but when we come back, I'll cheer you up a little bit. That was kind of gloom and doom. How about we cheer things up? This is The Game.